So, why get us so much trouble in the first place?
Quite.
Mm. More whiskey, old fellow.
Oh. Help yourself. Mm.
Now, so it seemed perfectly obvious to me that the only possible object of this fantastic business of the advertisement and the copying of the Britannica was to get our not very bright pawnbroker out of the house for a number of hours every day. And as I intimated to Clay, it would be difficult to think of a better idea than the one he eventually pursued. It was probably suggested initially by the colour of the hair of Clay's accomplice, Archie, alias Duncan Ross. So, they fixed upon Wilson's colouring as the line, set £4 per week as the lure, and caught their fish. £4 being nothing to men playing for 30,000.
What was it, trusted your suspicions? Clay, Spaulding as he was, coming for half wages?
Exactly. Why would someone of Spaulding's undoubted attributes take such a nondescript position? Mm. If there had been a woman in the house, I would have suspected a mere vulgar intrigue, but that was obviously out of the question. Yet there had been elaborate preparation and expenditure. But for what? Hmm? Then Wilson mentioned the cellar. You asked your wonderfully pertinent question about photographic developing, which told us Wilson was totally excluded from that room, and then, the game was on.
I must confess, I suspected something about the cellar. I could get no further myself.
Then I found we were dealing with Clay, one of the coolest, determined, most daring criminals in London, who was doing something in the cellar of a small pawnbroker's. This I had to see for myself. You remember, I beat on the pavement in front of the house, simply to see if the cellar stretched in front or behind. And as it was solid in front of the house, all the action was obviously happening towards the rear of the building. Then I knocked at the door. I hardly looked at Clay's face. His trouser knees were what I wanted to see, worn, wrinkled, and stained with hours of burrowing. The only remaining point was what they were burrowing for, and round the corner, in Farringdon Road, stood the answer, a branch of the City and Suburban Bank.
But how did you know it would be tonight?
The League, my dear fellow, closing up his offices, meant Wilson's usefulness was over. That is, they must have completed the tunnel. A further important factor, from their point of view, of course, was that a robbery carried out on a Saturday would give them two clear days for their escape.
How beautiful. Your chain of reasoning. Such a length. Yet every link rings true.
It saved me from ennui. That terrible boredom that, alas, I already feel closing in on me again, even now. My life is spent in one long attempt to escape from the commonplace of existence. These little problems help me to do so. And when there are no problems,
Holmes.
It is late, Watson. And Mrs. Watson.
Holmes, you know how I feel about the cocaine.
Man is nothing. It is the work that is everything. As Flaubert wrote to Jorson. Good night, my friend.
Holmes.
Watson. Good night.
In The Red-Headed League, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Merrison and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. Jabez Wilson was played by James Grout and Vincent Spaulding by James Wilby. With Nigel Carrington as Inspector Jones, James Green as Mr. Merriweather, and Sam Graham as Duncan Ross. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Red-Headed League was dramatized for radio by Vincent McInerney and directed by Patrick Rayner.